Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
October 14th, 2011. The Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. An expert lineup of industry specialists join Bruce Norris to discuss current industry regulation, head-scratching legislation, and the opportunities emerging for savvy real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Brongeist, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Real Wealth Networks, Fry Wiles Web and Branding, MVT Productions, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvived2011.com for more details.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Sean O'Toole. Sean is the founder and CEO of ForeclosureRadar.com. Prior to launching Foreclosure Radar, Sean successfully purchased and flipped more than 150 residential and commercial foreclosures. Leveraging 15 years in the software industry, Sean used technology as a key competitive advantage to build a successful real estate investment track record, and prior to that, he was involved in software startup companies. Sean, welcome to our show.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. I might mention that you're going to be a guest panelist October 14th at I Survive Real Estate, and that's something that very much looking forward to again. I'd have to tell you, you might not know this, but I think if there was a vote taken, you probably were the favorite panelist just because you were giving static to some of the other people. So that was enjoyed by all.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, that was a compliment. So no, we expect the same this time. Prior to buying at Trustee Sales, what part did real estate play in your business career?
Very early on, I actually ran a homes and land real estate magazine. This is back in the late 80s, early 90s in the Hawaiian Islands.
I didn't know that.
But other from that, 2-year stint was just kind of diversion from my software career. Very little other than buying and selling my own houses.
Okay, but you got into buying and Trustee Sales. I mean, that's kind of a big leap to go from, what you were doing to buying a Trustee Sales. How did that become attractive?
Yeah, so after the dot-com bubble, I was, trying to figure out what to do with my life. The company that we had started and raised a bunch of money for, we were trying to take it public at about the time the dot-com bubble imploded, and that all kind of came to an end. And so I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next, and I was thinking I was going to start another software company because that's really all I'd ever done other than the one magazine thing. And I was introduced to a friend that was buying foreclosures, and he said, geez, you got to give this a try, and if you help write some software to help me run my business, I'll teach you the rest of the business. Okay. And at first I didn't think that was very interesting, and then he showed me the kind of money he was making, and I got a lot more interested.
Okay. Back, what year are we talking about right now?
So I started buying at the Trustee Sales in 92.
1992.
Okay. 2002.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, that makes sense.
Off a decade there.
Okay, and that's an interesting time to be involved in that because I don't know how crowded that they were at the sales, but that era from, say, 2002 to 2006, I'm sure you were very often surprised on the high side. You bought a property, and, if it was a hassle to fix or get people out, you actually probably got bonused money along the way for the time delay. Is that accurate?
Yeah. In fact, one of my most profitable deals was where I had a gentleman fight me on the eviction for a year through multiple bankruptcy declarations, to the point where the judge said you can never file bankruptcy again for the rest of your life.
Mm.
And, you know, and it seemed like a real headache until I went and sold the property, and it had gone up, you know, nearly 50%.
It's probably a tad different right now.
Very different world today. Yeah.
You wouldn't want to have delays if you could get to the finish line. You'd like to do that. When you were starting in the trustee sale business, how easy was it to access information about property and liens and so forth?
Yeah, that was tough. There was actually a decent little service up in Northern California that later changed their business model and didn't have as good of information that I used at first. But after they changed their business model and stopped collecting the data directly, I had to go figure out how to find that data myself. And so pulling data from the assessor's office and the recorder's office. And then the biggest thing was, you know, you'd show up at these sales from everything that had been in the paper, and you'd have a list of like 20 properties. And then they'd call 100 properties because, you know, the other 80 had been postponing for some period of time. And, you know, unless you went back for years and through all the notices, you had no idea what was still coming up for sale or not.
And, yeah, you'd have to play catch-up, which would be an awful lot of homework. And, you know, people don't realize, unless they're in the business, that each property really entails full-blown title search, an appraisal, you know, not a formal appraisal, but you have to determine if the pursuit is worth your time. Now, fortunately, 2002 through 2006, there would be what I would call natural equity most of the time. Now, you weren't following a lot of trustee sales that didn't have equity, whereas now it's obviously completely different. Back then, did you even know the term drop bid?
No. It was very rare that the banks discounted the bid from the amount owed on the property.
And it probably wasn't necessary. That was the nice part about having inflation, is that their loan was probably below what it was worth, and it was attractive to trustee sale buyers. You know, that's even though the numbers of trustee sales was way down compared to now, I would say the amount of properties that had equity had to be very, very high in percentage.
Yeah, well, is one of the hardest things for me, my father's a logic professor, and things kind of need to make sense for me to be able to understand them. And one of the hardest things I had with trustee sales was that none of the deals that sold on the courthouse steps made any sense. You know, they had equity. The person could have sold the house, right? And it shouldn't have gone to sale, right? They should have taken care of their problems and paid their mortgage, or refinanced, or, you know, they had lots of options. And, you know, that's kind of when I learned that there was some basic reasons for foreclosure that happen even in the best of the times, which we call the 5 D's, which drugs, divorce, death, denial, and disease. And, you know, these things, of course, they're not fun to talk about. It makes the business feel not very great on that side. But, you know, back in that period of time, those were the reasons that properties were foreclosed on. Very different today. Those 5 things still exist. We still have foreclosures for those reasons. But the vast majority today are due to negative equity.
Right. We just have an additional category that's really reining a lot of properties into the system. Back then, you know, when you were checking up on sales, you were on the phone, you're trying to get information to see if it was going to be worth going to the sale, etc. How has your website really changed the process for somebody that's wanting to be a trustee sale buyer? How has it made it simpler?
Yeah, the person that taught me the business actually would take a Polaroid of each house and then write down the postponement dates, so when the thing had postponed, to on the back of the Polaroid. And well, one of the people that taught me. And so he actually had a shoebox organized by date of all the properties that could come up for sale. And literally each time a property came up for sale, he had to, you know, put a new date on it, put it in a new spot on the shoebox. And, you know, and it was variations of things like that. People kept spreadsheets. You really had to have somebody down at the sales every day to track all of that. And it was definitely one of the big goals with Foreclosure Radar, was to get people out of that really tedious sale tracking business. And I think that's one of the areas where we've been real successful.
I would think, honestly, you got to have a lot of pride in the website. You've made it much more accessible and understandable, the process. It's made competition much more. I mean, obviously, I'm in the business of buying there, so there's definitely new people that can go from novice to acceptable much quicker these days, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were definitely lucky to be in the right place at the right time. I do think, though, that transition would have happened whether we were there or somebody else was there. We launched in May of 2007. It was kind of towards the end of 2008 that the banks started dropping bids and people started making a lot of money. At the same time, we had a lot of contractors and commercial real estate folks and other folks that suddenly had seen their business go away, and they needed to find something else. And, trustee sales were kind of the right thing at the right time for a lot of folks, and we benefited from, kind of being the best tool at that point, and that was good. But I think the transition and the competition would have heated up regardless whether we'd been there or not.
Your customer base, is it dominated by investors, and what other categories of real estate people look at your site for information?
Yeah, actually, one of our largest categories is realtors, equal to or maybe even a little bit more than investors. And, just in my little hometown of Discovery Bay, there's, maybe 85 properties listed for sale, but there's 200 to 300 in some stage of foreclosure at any given time. So, if you want to call yourself a market expert, it's pretty hard to do if you don't have a clue about all those properties in some stage of foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listing a property and 2 days later a bank-owned listing pops up next door, there's no excuse for not having known about that ahead of time. We can give you months of advance notice that that's potentially coming. And, so you can work with your customer to be ready for it.
Do you have an idea of the volume of dollars in sales as far as trustee sales that go on in California?
Yeah. Let's see. I haven't run that stat in just a little while, and I should have it up in front of me right now. It's definitely in the billions.
Yeah.
It's a little lower now. Typically the third-party investors are buying, maybe 20%, and they're buying half a billion or so worth of property a month.
A month.
Okay. A month. So, you're talking, 2 to 5 billion. Our peak month was around $8 billion at original loan value, not at current market value.
$8 billion, and that would encompass the properties that would go to third party, go to REO, and that type of thing.
Right. Both either REO back to the bank or to a third party investor. Everything that's sold, basically when somebody has lost their house to foreclosure.
Okay. Those two categories combined, third party bidders and REOs, that's a resolution. How many properties move forward, let's say, get postponed, and then what percentage get canceled?
Yeah, so just, in California right now, for example, we currently have 95,000 properties scheduled for sale. And that's down quite a bit. A year ago, that was 120,000 properties scheduled for sale. And out of that, between both back to the bank and sold to third party, we're seeing maybe 14,000-15,000 sell a month. So, and then last month we saw 24,000 added. So you take that 94,000, we had 24,000 new added, and we had 15,000 taken away.
15,000 sales, 180,000 sales a year, let's say that would be, and we're selling something around 470. What percentage, and I'm just guessing that it's got to be 15% or more, are properties that are bought by people that are investors to fix and resell. So some of that volume has got double, it's the same house.
Almost everything. This is one of the reasons they don't use trustee sales when they're talking about, market sales. When they talk about, NAR or CAR talks about the number of homes sold per year, they're not including what happens at the trustee sales.
Okay.
And the vast majority of things purchased at trustee sale are resold. Almost all of your investors at trustee sale flip the properties, and then the banks, of course, largely relist those properties as REOs.
Who ends up getting rid of the properties quicker?
Yeah, investors by quite a bit. So right now in California, it takes banks on average, and this is in August, of the ones that were flipped in August, the banks on average 237 days, and the third-party investors 131 days. So investors are a lot better at disposing of properties than banks.
What would be the reason for that?
I think that there's a few things. You know, one, investors are pretty motivated mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, it's their money on the line, not shareholder or taxpayer money on the line. And so, you know, I think they're more motivated is one thing. Two, I think they know the local markets better. Three, they invest in homes and fix them up. And I think this is one of the places where, you know, you see, hear a lot of negative things about investors and flippers, but you know, folks flipping these properties are, you know, putting in new paint, new carpet. They're fixing them up. They're getting them ready for a first-time buyer or a landlord to turn into a rental or whatever. But they're fixing them up, and they usually make them pretty nice. The banks, because of the servicing agreements, this time really do little more than clean out the properties. You have a lot of properties that are trashed that end up going as REO sales. That, you know, first-time buyers simply can't afford to buy and then fix up and clean up. And you also have some that are so trashed you can't get loans on them. So, you know, the banks not fixing the properties up, I think, is a big part of it as well.
We hear the term shadow inventory all the time. What, when you hear that term, what do you feel is an accurate description of shadow inventory?
Yeah. When we first started talking about shadow inventory, and that was really prior to September 2008, because at that point the banks were taking on huge inventories of REOs that weren't listed. That's, you know, what we originally started talking about shadow inventory to mean. It was bank-owned homes that were not listed for sale. After September 2008, when they really slowed down the foreclosure sales, the government made some changes that really slowed down the foreclosure sales. That bank-owned inventory came down to the levels where it really should be. And, you know, a lot of the folks that have been talking about shadow inventory changed the definition to now include those folks that were in foreclosure and not yet bank-owned. And then it got changed again to also include those properties delinquent and not yet in foreclosure. And, you know, depending on who gives you the term these days, I've even seen some people to expand it to those who have so much negative equity, they'll eventually be delinquent and lose their home,
yeah,
and therefore they'll pay inventory. And I even had one the other day, you know, the guy said, well, you also have to include all the people who'd like to sell their home, but not at these prices. So, you know, pick your definition.
Most of the country is shadow inventory. Is that where that 10 million figure came out? That was just a few days ago. I think my definition, I guess, of shadow inventory is much different than the 95,000 plus 24,000 minus 15,000. That's the process, the bank-owned properties in California. But in late 2008, they just stopped foreclosing on stuff, but it didn't mean that the problem went away. So
right.
Nationally, and maybe I'm going to ask you, I don't know if you know it or not, but nationally there's about 4.2 million properties that are between the stages of 90 days late and the bank already owns them, which is basically approaching a year's supply. California, it seems like I remember you having that kind of a number on one of your presentations. Do you remember?
Yeah, so between pre-foreclosure, which means the notice of default has been filed, and that used to be filed at 90 days late. Now it can be filed later, but that would be kind of the traditional definition of that. We don't have delinquency data on just people that are late but not yet in foreclosure. But of the folks that are in foreclosure, you have 134 that are at the default stage plus 94 scheduled for sale. So, you know, that's 220. And then you've got another 100 that are currently bank-owned. So if you look at that, you know, it's 320, 330 in that area that are pretty well into the process and are likely to show up as you know, inventory for sale, say, in the next year.
I did see a report that tells me when we actually file the NOD, and that's at the 13-month mark.
Yeah, it's gone up a lot. I mean, traditionally it was at the 90-day mark, and now 13 months is very similar to what, you know, the stat that I've heard lately is 398 days, which is roughly the same.
Same thing. Well, okay, now the number you just gave me was 3.25, but that really didn't contain anything that was not filed some way.
Between 90 days and that 398 days, so that other 300 days worth of default delinquencies, which delinquencies in California are somewhere, and not in foreclosure, somewhere around 9%. So that's 30 days late or more.
Mm-hmm.
So 9% of homeowners with a mortgage, that's, you know, another 650,000. So all combined, you have close to a million.
And we're selling under 500,000. That's the thing. This isn't over. You know, there's some problems that are going to have to be resolved one way or the other, and that's going to be kind of fun to discuss with the group that we have on the panel October 14th is some of the resolution, because we seem to have some conflicting goals. We have a document that wants the country to save, you know, between $2 and $4 trillion so we can, you know, pay our bills, and we have an industry that almost needs more you know, more support. So it'll be interesting to see how that discussion comes about. I've got one other question about what percentage of owners are over encumbered in California. I know it varies very differently. So are more expensive properties less likely to be over encumbered at this point?
Yeah. So we haven't looked at that specifically. We did look at time to foreclose, which we should come back to. You know, in terms of percentage over encumbered, I haven't looked at that specifically. Certainly on dollar amount, yes, the larger properties are certainly more over encumbered. You know, we haven't seen yet the declines in the upper end. You know, you think about, you know, there's certainly been declines in the Bay Area or, you know, in Newport Beach and places like that. But they haven't been, La Jolla down in San Diego, but they haven't been as dramatic as, say, the declines in, you know, San Bernardino, Riverside, Central Valley, Sacramento.
Well, we're down to 40 seconds. Now, see, I would kind of attribute that to the bulk of the inventory that's for sale being a foreclosure property. And I know you and I probably disagree with that one, but the other is it just was a different loan type, too, that probably maybe didn't have the biggest problem as early as the subprime.
Well, and I'll add two more things. You know, one is wealth, right? Higher end neighborhoods tend to have more wealth, so they can hang in there longer. And then the other thing is we now have data that shows the banks are taking a lot longer to foreclose and go into foreclose on higher end homes where the losses are bigger. So part of the reason I think we've seen less there is that you know, we just haven't seen as much activity there yet, because the banks are trying to delay losses and remain solvent.
Sean, we got to go. Thank you for your the interview today, and we look forward to having you on the panel on October 14th.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2011. Adrenaline Athletics, Caldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Conaway and Conaway, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Kukan and Clark Partners LLC, Las Brisas Escrow, Lievis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Pacific Sunrise Mortgage, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Board of Realtors, Stars Photography, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Raven Paul and Company, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, Tony Alvarez, and Weston South Coast Plaza. Visit iSurvived2011.com for more details.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.